Good morning. Especially for those of you sitting late into the night, please do take care going up and down the stairs and so forth. We don't want you to trip and mess up your legs so you can't sit. So please do take care going up and down the stairs and so forth. Some of you might wonder why this late night sitting. The best way to find out is to do it and see. It has its value, it has its place, especially in this kind of a special situation. We have made arrangements. Everything is here. The food, sleeping, we have a schedule. You don't have to be concerned with any of that. You can just throw yourself, give all of yourself to the practice. So naturally, to give as much of our time as we can, depends on everyone's physical condition and so on, but as much as you can, certainly, to make the best use of this precious opportunity. But a natural attitude is all you need. You don't need some kind of a forced, unnatural attitude. It's quite a natural thing. As you do it, you will see it's quite natural. Certainly good zazen is better than bad sleep anyway. You can do it in an alert but relaxed attitude. Recognize, now we're going into, we've been sitting for some hours, recognize, are you getting some sore, painful areas in your body? Take a moment and recognize it. This is one of the great shortcomings of Japanese Zen for various cultural reasons. It has a tendency to kind of deny the body. You see it in the monastery. It has its value, but it also has its downside, as we say. So for us lay people practicing now for the next couple days, many, many hours every day, listen to your body. Take a moment. What's going on? Is there some tension, some tightness in the shoulders? Take a moment and see if you can undo it, huh? Lower back, knees. Also be aware when you're sitting, you may see that it's not just the body. You may start worrying about something. You may start going around in your head about something. And then, oh, your lower back all of a sudden starts hurting. Or you start tightening your shoulders up. Of course, the mind and the body are connected. So when you sit, be fully present. Physically and, of course, the mind as well. And you start to see, to recognize, how one directly affects the other. The body tightens up, the mind tightens up. Or the mind starts getting worried about something, the body starts to feel it. It starts to hurt. Recognize that and see what you can do, both physically to massage, loosen the pressure during the breaks, but also to have the proper natural attitude, not obsess about things. As we go through the Zazen manual, it will become clear what to do with our mind in Zazen. Then you will see that the physical and the mental pains, dis-ease, start to dissolve. But you need to be aware to listen to your body. Don't deny or try to pretend it's not there. It doesn't help. Okay? I mentioned last night briefly the need in Zen to finally realize it for yourself, as much as something is expressed or you read it, or it's described, explained. Not just in your head, but to realize it in a sense in your body, in your bones. Then you can do with it as you wish, as you please. You'll notice when we go through the Zazen manual, it begins with the body. Then it goes to the mind, because the body, in one sense, it's the most gross, the physical manifestation, so it's the easiest thing to get a handle on. The mind is more subtle, so we start with the simpler, more immediate, the body, and then move on to the mind. It's important when you sit, to sit in the body, to sit with your body, especially not just your mind or your head, but to feel yourself in your body. This helps also to be aware of tensions or pain. The cushion is too low or too high. You shouldn't move during the Zazen period, but in between you can find out what is the best posture for your body. But sit in with your body. Be embodied practice, not just in your head. Sit. The body itself is sitting. This is important. It's not something you just do with your head. As you do this, you will see it's really not difficult to let go, to release the mental fixations, as they're called, the fixed views. Maybe nowadays we might say the obsessions that we have and that we trap ourselves in, going around and around. You don't need to unnaturally force the practice, willful trying to force yourself into enlightenment. It will not work. You've already come here. You've already made preparations. You have prepared yourself and you have come here, taken days away from your family, work, and home to be here. You already have determination and will. You wouldn't be here if you didn't. So don't worry about that. Do you have enough? Yes, you do. Done. Forget it. You're here. Now, discover something much more basic than the mere self willpower. It's nothing. That's nothing. Try to sit with it. And all you need is one instant where you lose, where you lose the focus, and it's gone. It's gone. It's nothing. It's nothing. It's really utterly powerless. Maybe for a few minutes or at most a few hours it works, but in the long run your body just gets more pain. So as you sit, give yourself with your body to the sitting, and you will feel the earth, the ground itself, all of the others sitting here supporting you in your practice. Willpower is nothing compared to this. Nothing can get in the way of this. So realize what it is that is really supporting you in your practice. And you can stop trying to will your way into some kind of a state. It's a waste of time and energy. Compared with that willful self-effort, sitting grounded in the earth itself is 10,000 times, 10 million times more powerful. Nothing can really get in the way then. Then the pain, the frustration, the sleepiness just becomes fuel for the fire. Nothing can really get in the way of that. Again, as I said last night, the only way is to finally realize it for yourself. This means always, but in a sense especially during retreat, to question, to be free to question. If something doesn't seem right, to speak up. If you, for example, take the attitude that, oh, I'm the teacher, I'm the master, I'm the authority, so whatever I say goes. If it doesn't sound right, well, that's because I'm not enlightened and he is, so he must be right. This is sheer nonsense and has nothing to do with Zen. If you look at the history of Rinzai Zen with a clear eye, it is the history of questioning all the way, even, in a sense, especially the teachers. Look, for those of you who are interested, at the whole history of Rinzai Zen, and it's nothing other than that, as it must be. Of course, there's mutual respect. There's a deep mutual respect for the student and the disciple, or the two students, the two teachers, whoever it may be. Mutual respect. That's why we practice together. But that doesn't mean you cannot question. In a sense, it requires, when you, for example, see something that you have a doubt about, please, by all means, ask it. If it's true, if this is real, it will only become more real by asking and by doubting. As you well know, Zen embraces doubt. It doesn't push it away. You have doubt? Good. Take it all the way and then you'll know for yourself. So please, don't accept even what I say because I say it on blind authority. Test it. Prove it. Prove me wrong, please. Or prove me right, but you have to do that. Only you can do that. Each one of you for yourself. There is no other way. And in this way, we never give up on each other. We continue even though we may criticize, even though we may challenge, but we do it out of that same deep bond. Huh? But we never give up on each other. Huh? In one-on-one, you may come, not say a word. You don't need to speak. In a sense, it's almost always quite clear as soon as you enter the room where you're at. You don't need to say a word. Some of the best one-on-ones I've ever seen is where we just sit together and make it clear. You don't need to say a word. And yet, often the words can be helpful, both to express it for yourself, to convey it, and then maybe to see where something needs, a blind spot needs to be illuminated. Huh? If you've seen something clearly, good. Now what? Now what? One-on-one is not only to, in a sense, see that you're headed in the right direction, but also when you do really come upon something, how to work with that and how to continue it through. In a sense, that's the beginning of the real practice. So please do make best use of the one-on-one as well as sustained long-term hour after hour zazen. It's precious, precious indeed. About a month ago, I was on the plane coming here from Japan to Europe, and I was sitting next to a guy. I was flying from Tokyo to London, Heathrow. The first retreat was in the UK, and a guy, hearing him talk to the flight attendant, British accent. He was an English guy, British guy. I often fly to Europe and back, and often the people I happen to be sitting next to are maybe people who have come to Japan for a week to do a conference, scientific or some kind of a conference. Maybe they present a paper, or maybe they do a little sightseeing. And now, maybe a week later, they're going back home. You know, the small windows in the airplane. Small window, but it was a perfect view of Mount Fuji when we were leaving Tokyo. And it was February. Perfectly clear with the top half covered in snow. Just gorgeous. Just gorgeous. So I figured maybe he's not even seen it. This may be his last chance. So I kind of tapped him and said, look, there's a beautiful view of Mount Fuji out the window. And he didn't seem so interested. So I kind of actually, you know, kind of stretched so that he could see out the window. You know, he kind of looked and didn't look especially interested. And then he came back and went like, it was a 12-hour flight. So about 10 hours after that, when the breakfast came at the end, he struck up a conversation again. And that's when I found out, he said, oh yeah, by the way, I live at the I've been living at the foot of Mount Fuji for 18 years now. Sometimes when I look down, I can see my house. So he had a couple of good laughs about, you know, he thought I was a newcomer, all excited about seeing Mount Fuji. I've been there 33 years. And I thought he was a newcomer, although he's also married to a Japanese woman, but he lives at the foot of Mount Fuji, unlike me, so he, of course, knows it better than I do. So we had a couple of good laughs and exchanged our name cards and everything. But that's exactly how we do the practice. Huh? You look out the window, maybe I even bend you over a little, but what you finally see is, hopefully, nothing so new, so new. Well, that's Mount Fuji. Please feel free to stand up and stretch for a moment if you'd like. Let's now return to the Zazen manual. First paragraph. Bodhisattvas aspiring to prajna wisdom should first arouse great compassion, take the four great vows, and cultivate samadhi concentration, vowing to set all beings free. Do not seek liberation for yourself alone. He's addressing the reader of this manual as a bodhisattva. Literally, that means an awakening being, a being of, as, for, awakening. Bodhi, awakening, sattva, awakening being. In other words, all of us. Bodhisattvas aspiring to prajna. Prajna is the wisdom of Buddhism. It's not intellectual knowledge, but the wisdom that liberates. The truth, also spoken of as the Dharma, the living truth that liberates. Bodhisattvas aspiring to prajna wisdom, all of us, should first arouse great compassion, a common Mahayana Buddhist sentiment. Great compassion. Again, the first of our four great vows, which we recite in the morning and the evening. Numberless beings set free. That's the first vow, not enlighten me, but numberless beings set free. That's the first for a very good reason. So again, how aware are you of this compassion, that you are doing this not for yourself? How could you do it for yourself? You're doing it because you are not separate from all beings. You're doing it for all beings. Well, okay, maybe you're not completely aware of that. For me, in the beginning, of course, I was in it for myself. But if you're practicing properly, that self that you're doing it for, we all suffer. We have dis-ease. So quite naturally, for many of us, we're starting there. And we want to stop that. We want to stop that suffering. Okay, yeah, it'd be nice if he gets it too, but first I got to get it, right? So you see how Mahayana Buddhism turns that self-centered notion on its head in the very beginning. No, you begin proper practice from that ground, from all beings, for all beings, with all beings. There is no other way to start. If you're starting from yourself, you're not starting. You're still going around in the same circle, although you may call it Buddhism or Zen. So once again, from the very first sentence, and actually it's the very end as well, he ends where he begins, the need to realize where we are when we practice. Well, I haven't quite realized it yet. Fine, fine. Just remain open to it. Give yourself the proper practice. Keep your eye open. You will see. You will see. Okay? So first we arouse great compassion. By giving ourselves to the practice, it becomes clear. And then the next point is take the four great vows. Well, we are reciting them three times in the morning and in the evening. And of course, this is intimately connected with practicing for, with, as, all beings. The third point is the more technical point. Huh? And cultivate samadhi concentration. Cultivate samadhi, concentrated oneness. Huh? Later on, he will change the term and he will speak a number of times about dhyana, which is the word that became chan, and then Japanese zen. It's confusing because actually in the Buddhist tradition is many, many, many traditions in many, many countries over many centuries. So the word samadhi and the word dhyana has been used in many different ways. Here, very simply, samadhi is the kind of entrance concentration, gathering all into one. The focused concentration as we enter zazen. And then, for example, as we get up to do kinhin, walking meditation, continuing as best we can that concentration by simply watching the foot of the person in front of us and following in those footsteps. Having a meal in silence. In a sense, maintaining that, continuing that concentrated, focused oneness on, in this case, what we are doing at the moment. So the importance of cultivating, like a farmer cultivates a field. Cultivating samadhi, concentration. And then, just to make it crystal clear, he repeats, vowing to set all beings free. This is the first of the four great vows. Vowing to set all beings free. Do not seek liberation for yourself alone. You see, in a sense, how essential that is. If you start from yourself, you end with yourself. And it doesn't work. It's an illusion. It's not there in the first place. So dig a little deeper and see what is really driving you in this practice. Let me read that first paragraph again. Bodhisattvas aspiring to prajna wisdom should first arouse great compassion, take the four great vows, and cultivate samadhi concentration. This is precisely what we're doing here. Vowing to set all beings free, do not seek liberation for yourself alone. From the common sense point of view, this can sound rather heavy. Oh, I got to do it for everybody? I mean, not just the Dutch people or the Belgians or even the Europeans. People alive now, that's already pretty big. All beings? Even the ones I don't like? It sounds like a very heavy weight on your shoulders, but it's not that at all. It's simply realizing the ground that you are on now. Where do you think you are now? Huh? Did you bring yourself into being? Huh? How long could you exist solely by yourself? Huh? Hmm? Do you exist without the air that you breathe, the water that you drink, the people that help you every day? Where do you really think you are? If you're in your head, of course, you can create this grand self-image and think that you're sustaining it all, but take a good look. This is really where we begin, where we are beginning. It's not some goal that you will reach someday. Huh? Look under your feet. I trust that first paragraph is clear. The second paragraph. Let go of all conditions and put all concerns to rest, with body and mind one, and no separation between movement and stillness. Be moderate with food and drink, taking neither too much nor too little. Regulate sleep, neither depriving, that means not doing it, or indulging, doing it too much. Let go of all conditions, put all concerns to rest. Very simply, the conditions are speaking more about the external conditions, and the concerns are more our internal worries, thoughts, feelings, and so on. Of course, the point is they are not absolutely distinguished, separate things, right? The external conditions contribute to our attitude, and our attitude, right? So they're spoken of as two different things, but the point is we let them all go. We put it all to rest. The so-called internal and the external. Let go of all conditions. So we turn off our cell phone. We turn off our computers. We don't write for a good reason. We don't read for a good reason. We don't even need to keep a journal. You can do that Tuesday night, huh? We don't manipulate our mind in that way. We just experience what is present at the moment. Letting all of our thoughts about it go. All of our plans, all of our hopes, all of our memories. Let it all go. And just give ourselves to the immediate practice. Once again, let go of all conditions and put all concerns to rest. It's quite easy here in this environment where we are away from our external concerns and everything else here, the food, sleeping, schedule, it's taken care of. You can let it go. Let it go. Worst comes to worst, you just have to check the schedule every once in a while. What comes next? That's all. Let it go. Next, with body and mind one. So not just in your head, but with body that we sit with and the mind that we sit with, one. And no separation between movement and stillness. So stillness of Zazen and the movement of the daily activities. Kinhin, eating, taking a walk, whatever. Not artificially separating them. When we sit, we give ourselves to the Zazen. Zazen literally means seated Zen. Then when we get up, of course we can take a break. The Kinhin, we can stretch our legs, but that's not the point. The point is we are learning to continue that stillness in a simple movement like Kinhin, to maintain that in a simple movement, and then having a meal, taking a walk, taking a break, doing whatever. So without separating the movement and the stillness. Finding out when you come back in the middle of the retreat, huh? You come back after a break, sit down and realize, oh, yeah, I'm not starting Zazen now. I'm just continuing it in this posture.
Yes. Yeah.
It comes to be continuous the way you are. Later on, he repeats this several times, how important it is to be able to have that, what he calls the dhyana, or the concentrated power of dhyana that develops. So this is, in a sense, very simply, a more deeper state of that samadhi where we first enter the concentrated oneness. But we'll get to that later. Then very practical, very simple. Be moderate with food and drink, taking neither too much nor too little. Yeah, we have nourishing meals here. Eat. But don't gorge yourself. Sometimes people sitting here, it's painful, it's frustrating, it's tough, they're having a hard time. Not yet settled in the sitting. So food, and they try to escape from the pain by eating a lot. It's pretty stupid, right? We just create another dis-ease, right? Then we go to try to lay down and we're too full to rest. And then, of course, we sit and we start falling asleep or have a stomach ache. Don't overeat. Eat as much as you need to do what you're doing. This is work. Zazen is work. We may be sitting still, but I assure you, you're burning up energy. So, yeah. Have a good, nourishing meal. But don't overeat. Okay. On the same note, regulate sleep, neither depriving nor indulging. Well, we're getting pretty close to depriving with that 3 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock. But you can take a nap after meals. You can take a nap, especially the lunch break, I think, is quite long. So as you need. And you will find if you are sitting and practicing properly, you don't need so much sleep. Because sitting deeply is very, very restful. It's very, very concentrated and focused. But properly done, the body and the mind are completely relaxed. So you don't need to sleep so much. Find out for yourself, huh? I'll read that second paragraph again. Let go of all conditions and put all concerns to rest, with body and mind one, and no separation between movement and stillness. Be moderate with food and drink, taking neither too much nor too little. Regulate sleep, neither depriving nor indulging. In this Zazen manual, he doesn't talk much at all about the breath, but the breath is actually a very good way to bring together. They're not separate in the first place, but in our head, it becomes so. The body and the mind, they are one, but in our head, we separate them. So to get out of our head, we use the breath as a focus. Don't try to imitate what I'm doing. You don't need to do that. Everyone has different lung capacity. Just use the breath that you have. As it says in the early Buddhist sutras, if it's a deep breath, be aware it's a deep breath. If it's a shallow breath, be aware it's a shallow breath. That's all. Over time, it will become slower, deeper, and longer. But if you try to force it, it will have the opposite effect. You'll just get more frustrated. You don't need to force it. Just as much breath as you have, especially the out-breath, just give it. Like you're exhausting yourself. You're letting it all go, as it said, let go of all conditions. Physically do that using the breath. It's really a very good method. Do you see why? There's nothing added. There's nothing. We're not giving you anything. No koan, no mandala to look at, no mantra to recite, right? No philosophical principle to think about, no religious dogma, nothing. Nothing. Just what is already there, right? If you're alive, you're breathing, right? If you're not breathing, you're dead. You see? Nothing. Only what is always already here. You got it. But we're often alienated from our own breath, aren't we? Huh? You find yourself just breathing like that. Huh? So all this is doing is allowing us to return to that which brings together the body and the mind and keeps us alive. It nourishes us. Nothing else. Nothing else. You're breathing whether you think about it or not. Right? The problem is, we're often off somewhere in our head. So all we're doing is, you see, not another thought. Think about breathing. No, forget it. Breathe! What you already are doing, but be one with it. Don't separate. Right here, there is no inside or outside, better or worse, illusion or enlightenment. Huh? There's just the breath, breathing itself. See what a valuable entrance this is. Nothing added. Nothing added. No hoopla. No paraphernalia. Nothing. And you've always already got it. If you lose it, it's still there. No problem. Just come back to it. That's all. Later on, he will go into some detail about how to deal with the thoughts that arise. But if you're focused in the breath already, you're allowing yourself to get out of your head and into the physical center of your body. Huh? Of course, you're breathing with your lungs, but using the muscles down here, the breath naturally becomes deeper and slower and longer. It's very relaxing, very settling for the body. The third paragraph, getting even more practical and specific. For Zazen, spread a thick mat, got it. In a quiet place, got it. Loosen your clothing. The expression has to do with the robes, loosening the robes. Huh? But in our case, you might say, if you're wearing a belt, loosen your belt. Make sure that your clothes are loose, not restricted. Huh? Okay. Loosen your clothing, but maintain proper bearing, posture. In other words, clothes can be comfortable, but you're not. The clothes can be loose, but not you. Huh? So you should be maintaining the proper posture, but comfortable. And sit in full lotus. This is a manual for monks who naturally would sit in full lotus. Of course, you don't have to sit in full lotus. You do need to find the best posture for your body. The basic point, back naturally erect, following the natural curvature of the spine. Don't worry so much about the legs. As long as the back is naturally erect. If you use a chair, fine. But don't lean against the back, because then your posture won't be good. Sit just in the front of the seat, I often go like this when I first sit, stretch forward and then come up. I find it very helpful to see that the spine is naturally erect. And he tells how to do full lotus. First, place the right foot on the left thigh, then the left foot on the right thigh, or sit in half lotus, placing the left foot on the right thigh. Left and right, it doesn't matter. This is just, it goes back to India and the symbolism of right and left, passive and active. Don't worry about it. As a matter of fact, recent research suggests that it's good to use both ways, because if you always sit, for example, half lotus, and you always just use the left leg or the right leg, it tends to develop an unbalanced in the base of your spine. It can do damage. So I prefer sitting like this, which happens to be the right way. Actually, this is the way you practice, and then after you get enlightened, you're supposed to reverse it. No, I'm serious. If you look at the early sutras, because the idea is this is the passive. You're stopping so that you can realize it. And then after you've awakened, you reverse the legs. Yep, you sit like this. Because then it's active. You're here, sitting here for all being. So you're freely getting up and doing what needs to be done very soon. It's just a... Did I reverse the legs? They're so comfortable I can't even tell which one. Anyway, so don't worry about the right and the left. But if you can, don't just sit with one leg up. Sometimes try the other leg. It seems to be better for the balance, okay? And of course, if you can't sit full lotus or half lotus, there's the Burmese where you have the legs flat on the ground. There's Seiza, as many of you are doing, sitting on a bench. There's a chair. The point is, try it. Don't move during the Zazen, but for one Zazen period, try the different postures, the different height of the cushion, and see what works for you. See what works for you. Of course, if you can do things like stretching. This morning we did some pranayama. There's also, for example, hatha yoga stretches and other things that you can do to help get your body into shape. If you can sit in full lotus, by all means do it. They knew what they were doing. It looks to the Germans probably like a pretzel, doesn't it? Huh? Wrapping your legs up like a pretzel. But it's an extremely comfortable posture once you get used to it. Huh? And it opens up the hips so that you can breathe really well. And the back is naturally erect. Huh? What you're doing is taking the legs and putting them in such a way that supports what you're doing. I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying right here and sitting through, but doing it in a way that supports the base of the spine, opens up the hips, and then the hands too, you know, the formal posture, as I'll explain. All of this is done not just out of ritual formulas, but as a way of helping us, supporting us in what we are doing, sustained, giving all of ourselves to the practice. Again, you have to find out what works. But there is good reason for the full lotus. If you can do it or learn to do it, take a hot bath at night. That helps a lot. Recently came from Budapest where they have those spas, over 3 hours in there. They have those things, you know, on your back and your neck and everything. If I was any more relaxed, I'd be dead. So yeah, good hot bath can really help to limber up. Okay, but figure it out for yourself. The next paragraph, even more specific. Next, place the right hand on the left foot. This is assuming you're sitting in full lotus. The right hand on the left foot, the left hand on the right palm, really the fingers, thumbs touching. This is the formal posture for sitting, the mudra. For sitting in Zazen. But the informal posture is taking the thumb and wrapping the left hand around the thumb of the right hand like this. Again, you can do it the other way, it doesn't really matter. this is also a way that the Zen monks sit, this way or the more formal posture like this. The point is, watch the shoulders, they don't get tight, they should be relaxed. Continuing, raise the torso, the top part of your body, so it's not slumped over. Raise the torso and stretch it forward. Huh? Very good for the lower back when you first sit. Again, I actually exaggerate this and go all the way down like that. I find that helpful. Then it says, rock side to side. So in other words, you go like this so that you can find the balance, so that you're not leaning to one side. Huh? Let gravity play its role. And then boom, rock side to side. And then sit erect. Do not tilt to one side. Don't, especially if you're sitting half lotus, there's a tendency to be a little bit tilting to one side. So try to be aware of that. Again, if you rock, it can help them when you feel yourself centered. You can also rock back and forth in the beginning to see that you're centered. Again, do not tilt to one side, forward or backward. It should be fairly straight. Align, keep in order the hip joints, the spine, and the head, like a stupa. Huh? Like a stupa, like a building, like a statue. Do not strain, do not force it, but do not strain to make your body erect, as this will constrict the breath and cause discomfort. It shouldn't be uncomfortable, and it certainly shouldn't restrict the breath, because that will make it even harder. So, erect, but not strained. Ears in line with the shoulders. So often Westerners tend to have their head go forward. Huh? So the ears should be in line with the shoulders. And then the nose in line with the navel, the belly button. Huh? Tongue resting on the upper palate. In other words, the roof of your mouth. Hmm? It's just a natural way you would do it if you're not going around feeling stuff in your mouth, cleaning your teeth or something. Hmm? So if you put your tongue gently on the roof of your mouth, you don't have to swallow so much, so it's better for the concentration. Huh? Mouth gently closed. If you can, breathe with your nose. So the mouth gently closed. Don't do it tight because it's not good for the jaw and you pushing your teeth together too tightly. Gently closed. Eyes slightly open to prevent drowsiness or sleepiness. If you close your eyes, you tend to get sleepy. So not wide open looking around, but half closed, naturally looking a few feet in front of you. It's unnatural though, isn't it? Huh? We're used to either looking at something or closing our eyes, but this half open stuff, huh? It doesn't seem natural. So many people say, can I close my eyes? The whole next paragraph is about why you open your eyes. So let the next paragraph say it, huh? But as a matter of fact, Ron, you remember Tanasan, the Thai monk at Tofu? Yeah, he came up to California. He's in Southern California. He came up to San Francisco to meet in January. We spent the day together. He's really well. But just to make sure we sat together and I tried it, Thai monks close their eyes when they meditate. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. But we, Japanese Zen monks, we have our eyes half closed. And there is good reason, which the next paragraph goes into. But the point is, if you're doing zazen properly, this is what your eyes would be doing anyway. We're not trying to do something artificial with them. If you're not looking at or for anything, but you're remaining clearly aware, you wouldn't close your eyes, but you wouldn't be looking around. Your eyes would just naturally be like that. You watch people really focused on something, they're doing the same thing. You're doing the same thing, unless you need to be watching something in what you're doing. We don't. But we don't close our eyes, just like we don't close our ears. You don't need to. If the fire alarm goes off, we hear it. If the birds chirp, we hear it. If the car goes by, we hear it. That's not a problem. The same thing with the eyes. But we do it in a way that allows us to continue the focus. So the eyes would just fall a couple of feet in front of you, kind of half closed. You're not looking at anything. You're not looking for anything, but the eyes are naturally functioning. Perfectly natural. If you start looking, you're going to start seeing patterns on the floor. Oh, dragon, yeah. My mother's fate, you know. So you don't need to look at anything, but the eyes will just naturally be like that. So give it a chance. Try it for a while, and you'll see it is quite natural. Huh? Okay. If you really can't do it, give it a chance. But if you really can, it's okay to close your eyes. All the Zen masters will say, it's okay, as long as you stay focused. Okay. But first, try it the way they explain it, with the eyes half closed. And when you're sitting properly, you'll realize, oh, yeah, that's what I'm doing. So 1, 2, 3, 4. We've done 4 paragraphs, already covered a bit of ground. Are there any questions about what we've gone over so far? It's maybe about 1/3 of the text right there, almost 1/3. Is there any question, something you didn't understand, you want to make sure about? It's clear so far? Yeah.
About not supposed to do it for myself. Mm-hmm. First place, very difficult.
Mm. Yeah. I know. So just keep your heart open. You find it difficult to do for your child?
Nay.
Nay? Yes. Well, there's a sutra called the Vimalakirti Sutra that explains just like a mother or a father whose child is ill, when their child is ill, it's as if they're ill. And when their child is better, recovers, they feel better. No secret, no mystery there. Every parent knows that. Huh? But for the bodhisattva or the Buddha, they are that way with all beings. They're all their children. So we just don't stop there. Okay? But you'll see. You'll see. Okay? Any other questions or concerns?
Just a remark about what you said about the hot bath. Because maybe now people would think that if they take a hot shower, for example, right in the middle of a retreat, that it'd do good with the legs, but sometimes that works the other way around in my experience. So the knees become like...
Yeah, if they're already sore. Yeah.
So if you're already sitting intensely, maybe it's not the best moment.
Yeah, I would wait until after the retreat and you're all healed, then go and sit. Again, not a shower. I think a bath is probably really soaking in the hot bath. I don't know if you have some kind of stuff that you can put in the bath. They have all kinds of stuff that might help. But yeah, I wouldn't suggest doing something radical during the retreat because, you know, you're already, your legs may be swollen. So, yeah. Thanks. If there are no more questions, I'll reread the 4 paragraphs that we just did one more time to let it sink in, okay? And then we'll continue again tomorrow. Bodhisattvas aspiring to prajna wisdom should first arouse great compassion. Take the 4 great vows and cultivate samadhi, concentration. Vowing to set all beings free, do not seek liberation for yourself alone. Let go of all conditions and put all concerns to rest, with body and mind one. No separation between movement and stillness. Be moderate with food and drink, taking neither too much nor too little. Regulate sleep, neither depriving nor indulging. For Zazen, spread a thick mat in a quiet place, loosen your clothing, but maintain proper bearing, and sit in full lotus. First, place right foot on left thigh, then left foot on right thigh, or sit in half lotus, placing left foot on right thigh. Next, place right hand on left foot, left hand on right palm, thumbs touching. Raise torso and stretch it forward. Rock side to side, then sit erect. Do not tilt to one side, forward or backward. Align the hip joints, the spine, and the head like a stupa. But do not strain to make your body erect, as this will constrict breath and cause discomfort. Ears in line with shoulders, nose in line with navel, belly button, tongue resting on upper palate, roof of the mouth, mouth gently closed, eyes slightly open to prevent drowsiness. If you're experiencing pain, be there with it. Don't react to it. If you react to it, it just makes it worse. Be there with it. Be there with it. See what it has to say. Do you need to adjust your posture? Maybe in the next sitting you can try slightly different cushion. This is not torture. Hear what it's saying. But don't be enslaved by it. In other words, you get a little pain here, then you move over here. Okay, then a minute, feels good. Then it starts hurting here. Okay, then you're just avoiding the pain game. You're not really sitting. So we're not here to torture ourselves. But we're not here to avoid all pain either. We have a body. We have a mind. We live here. The body has pain. It's the body telling us something is wrong. Listen to it. And if you can, if necessary, adjust. Or see, perhaps, is there some knot, some tightness in your mind, some worry that is causing it? Huh? Often that happens like with the shoulders. You start worrying about something, boom, the shoulders get tight. Huh? Then the back, then it just goes on and on. So if you're aware of that and you can catch it right there and release it, the body is much more fresh. Okay? So please, don't torture yourself. Listen to your body, but don't be a slave to it. Is it clear? Is it clear? If there are no more questions, thank you for your questions and comments. I'm sure they're helpful for others as well. And Mariel, maybe you think you need to think about all beings or something like that. That's not what it means. You know, you don't have to I have to remember to include everybody in here. That's not what it means. Huh? You'll see. You'll see. It comes from here. Okay? Thank you all for your questions and for listening so intently.